With that. All right, let's talk some football, Eagles football with Sheil Kapadia. Of course, he joins us typically on Wednesdays during the season, but moved to Thursday today. And, you know, there's a lot going on with the Birds. Free agency in the combine soon, but a big decision they made yesterday with Kevin Pitullo as the new offensive coordinator. Sheil, of course, does work for The Ringer. Great work, and you can follow him at Sheil Kapadia on Twitter. Good morning, Sheil.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Super.
All right, so, Sheil, let's start with this Pitullo guy. What can you tell us in the audience about what you know about him, what he's done, and whether you think it's the right hire or not?
Yeah, I think he's obviously Nick Sirianni's right-hand man, and that's been the case since Nick Sirianni was hired by the Eagles four seasons ago. So to me, the most interesting part about this is that Nick Sirianni has some of the juice back. You know, last year at this time, he's being handed his coordinators on both sides of the ball. Obviously, that works out great. They win the Super Bowl. But every coach in the NFL, most coaches in the NFL, I should say, do have the option to pick their own coordinators. And I think that's what you're seeing here, where he looked at it and said, all right, we have an opening. I just won the Super Bowl. This is the guy I want. This is the guy who I think is going to be the best for the job. So what I think of it, you know, he's an unknown. Does he have the ability to problem solve? Is this just kind of opting for familiarity more so than maybe who would be the best option if you did a search far and wide? But I also understand Sirianni wanting familiarity with the state of the franchise and the fact that, again, they did just win the Super Bowl.
Sheil, what did you make of Jalen Hurts' hesitant answer when he was asked about Kevin Pitullo last week?
Well, matter of fact, if you could, Sheil, hang on a moment. Let me play the audio so everyone can hear that. Let's listen to Jalen. This is before Pitullo got hired, when we all knew he maybe would get hired, and Jalen Hurts talked about Pitullo. This was last week.
He said continuity, Kevin Pitullo potentially could be a candidate. You know him and work with him. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that idea?
Yeah. Kevin Pitullo's never been a, he'd have a different role. So it's hard to compare, you know, that role to this role because his job is going to demand something totally different of him. And I have a lot of confidence in him and what he's shown. However, I know, you know, over the years I've learned that's out of my jurisdiction. And so kind of just taking things as they come and trying to go out there and be the best I can be and just learn and evolve.
Sheil, what'd you make of that answer?
He had to stop himself a little bit there. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, I would say. But listen, we can read into a lot of the stuff Jalen Hurts has said over the years, and sometimes it doesn't matter. Then he goes out and he's fine, and they make it work with him and Sirianni. So I'm sure, you know, part of Hurts' wishes that he kind of had a guy that he could work with for year after year and stick with the same scheme and the same language and all that stuff. But that's just not going to be the case. You know, when your coach is not the play caller and you're a successful organization, which they've been, then you're going to have guys get poached here. And so it's someone he's worked with for four seasons. I don't know the nature of their relationship. They've obviously made it work at a high level. They've gotten to two Super Bowls here. So, it's wait and see. I hate to be wishy-washy about it, but when you hire someone who hasn't had experience and you haven't seen do it, it's just hard to know. You know, they could come in and they could be phenomenal and you weren't expecting it. Or we could be sitting here in week six going, man, that was a disaster.
Yeah, look, it is very hard to know. We addressed that earlier in the show. I mean, it's just, you know, it's impossible for us to stand strong and say we know if this is going to work out. Because, I mean, how can we? We don't know much about the guy. I will say this, though, Sheil. I was intrigued by the possibility, and the Eagles did not pull this lever, of the Eagles going to a 60-year-old-ish who would be unlikely to be poached as a future head coach. I don't think Frank Reich would probably get another gig, even if the Eagles won another Super Bowl. A Marty Morningwig type who, you know, you bring him in, probably never going to be a head coach again, that much like Vic Fangio, you can say, this is our guy for the next 5 to 10 years. Do you think they maybe made a mistake not trying to go down that avenue? Because we all know this. If the Eagles win the Super Bowl and the offense flourishes, then Kevin Pitullo could be out the door. Do you think they should have considered perhaps more than they did that approach?
Well, you know, I think Frank Reich obviously did a phenomenal job with the Eagles in 2017 here during the Super Bowl run. But, I mean, if you look at recent years, I think we could be having a conversation saying, man, he didn't really have inspiring offenses or have a lot of great success after he left Philadelphia in Indianapolis. in Carolina. So I don't think you want to go for that just for the fact that, hey, this guy's not going anywhere if he succeeds. I think you have to build that pipeline. You know, this is very important for these coaches who are not play callers, where it's not only about hiring the offensive coordinator, it's about the quarterback's coach and the assistants under them, because you really want to have a system where if a guy does leave, you're grooming someone to be that next guy. Now, that's easier said than done, but I do think that's more of the solution they're looking for rather than finding, you know, if you could find the offensive version of Vic Fangio, that'd be fantastic. But I don't know that Frank Reich is that guy at this stage in his career.
No, that's fair. All right, Sheila, let's get to some other issues. There's a lot. Let's start with the news yesterday from an NFL standpoint about the salary cap taking a jump. If you could walk everyone through the implications as you see it for the Eagles. Obviously, it jumps for everybody. But what do you make of it from an Eagles standpoint that it went up more than expected?
Yeah, that's the key there, is that more than expected. You know, every team has their internal projections of, hey, how much is the salary cap going to go up? How much money are we going to have to spend? And not that, you know, we don't need to get into the specific numbers here, but basically the number is a lot higher than I think most teams, so maybe every team, was anticipating. So it does give you some more flexibility to work with, some more room to work with, and the Eagles probably benefit from that as much as any team in the NFL. When you look at their salary cap status and the kind of dollars they're committing to a lot of these players, specifically on the offensive side of the ball, they could use that flexibility, especially when we look at some of these players. They might look into retaining a guy like Zach Bond. They might have a little more flexibility than maybe they were anticipating.
So Zach Bond, Mekhi Becton, Milton Williams, Josh Sweat, we thought maybe two could be the maximum of those guys that Howie would be able to keep. Does this news about the salary cap, does that change that number?
I don't think it changes that number. I think one is probably the most likely, and I think, I think two would be a scenario where somebody like Josh Sweat or Mekhi Becton doesn't get the money they're looking for on the open market. You know, I think Milton Williams, just looking at this stuff yesterday, looking at the market, looking at past contracts, looking at what defensive tackles get paid, I would be pretty surprised. You know, anything can happen, but I would be pretty surprised if he were to return. Zach Bond is probably the most interesting guy to me here, because he is a very tough projection, a very tough evaluation when you look at it, and he's only had one season of stellar play. He's entering his age 29 season, and if you look at off-ball linebackers, you know, they don't get paid kind of through the roof, except for maybe the top two or three guys. And those guys are generally younger and have kind of a longer track record than Zach Bond. So it really could go either way with Bond, where we could be sitting here saying, man, the Eagles were able to bring him back at a number that was lower than people anticipated. Or we could say, hey, it only takes one team, and some team got real aggressive and saw how good this guy was last season and said, no, we are going to pay him at the very, very top of the market.
What does that even look like? What is the very top of the market for Zach? But it can't be like the 40, close to the $40 million we're talking for the edge linebacker.
Jai, I was just looking at this. So if you look at it, there are only three off-ball linebackers making more than $15 million per year. So, you know, that would be, if you're saying the very top, you're saying like 19, $20 million per year. But I kind of think that maybe the $14 million per year range might be more likely. You know, that would make Zach Bond a top five paid linebacker in the NFL. So it's not like you're lowballing him. It's not like he's not getting what he's worth. And so that would be kind of the lower end of it. Again, when guys go to free agency, which you guys know, it's a market. All it's, you know, it takes one team. If you get two teams in a bidding war, all of a sudden we're seeing contracts that nobody expected. But, you know, I'm not positive that that's going to be the case with Zach Bond.
Sheila Kapadia here with us. Yeah, free agency in about 2 weeks. And the combine prior to that, it's fascinating how quick this thing gets going. Sheila, let me ask you this. John and I had a similar impression of Nick Sirianni's speech at the Art Museum steps during the parade, end of the parade. And maybe this is phony baloney and we're just reading something into it that didn't exist, but we both interpret it the way he presented himself. I'll call it a little bit tepid. He wasn't over the top. He wasn't, he just was very measured as the beginning of Sirianni trying to lay a framework for next year. He didn't Doug Peterson. It's the new norm. We're the best. Like, he didn't do all that. And he followed suit with the way he's really been since early October, measured and careful. And I'm wondering if you interpret it that way as well, that it's the beginning of laying the groundwork for next season.
Yeah, it was a little muted. You know, I thought there was a chance we were going to get something something big from Nick Sirianni. And, you know, he had reason to do it. You know,
yes,
I touted him. I was, you know, I did not think it was going to work the way it worked, and he did it. It was maybe the best back against the wall season by a coach that I can remember, where you go into a season, you think, you know you have to win to avoid getting fired, and you go and you win the freaking Super Bowl. I mean, that usually does not happen. So, yeah, I thought we might get a little something different. We didn't get that. I don't know if it's laying the groundwork. I think it's more a case of kind of knowing who you work for and knowing what they're looking for and trying to, you know, be that guy. You know, Jeffrey Lurie, during the Super Bowl in New Orleans, said that Nick Sirianni's emotion is his greatest strength and his greatest weakness. Like, he was still saying that days before the team was playing in the Super Bowl. So I think Nick Sirianni knows kind of the image that the organization wants him to portray in the public, and I think maybe it had a little bit more to do with that than laying the groundwork.
Sheil, I'm just wondering, this is just a theory. TJ Paganetti, I don't know how familiar you were with him, but it feels like that was a loss. That was a coach that the Eagles probably would have liked to have kept around. He was here all the way back to Chip. He had been here basically studying under Jeff Stoutland, and now he's going away to be the Saints' offensive line coach. It just feels like it really hurts. Did that in your mind contribute in any way to the offensive coordinator decision? That, you know, it's almost like Paganetti was the assistant run game coordinator. Now the Eagles said, hey, let's lock him up. Let's lock our assistant, you know, let's lock the pass game coordinator up just so another one of our guys doesn't get out that door. Any validity to that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that when a guy lasts through three different coaching staffs, that means he obviously brings value to the organization. In the NFL, that's very rare to last through, you know, three different staffs there.
Yeah.
But I like the original. I like the OG, and that's Jeff Stoutland, and he's still there. And you might be able to put me in there and say, hey, go grab some coffee. Hey, this guy needs new cleats. And, you know, the offensive line and the run game, I think, are still going to be pretty good. So, they're dealing with some of the issues that you deal with when the team is good, when a team wins the Super Bowl. You know, a guy like Paganetti was not going to be able to advance his career here as long as Jeff Stoutland's still coaching. And luckily for the Eagles, Jeff Stoutland is still coaching. So I understand a guy wanting to go elsewhere to get a promotion. I think that's what happened around the league. So it's not something that, you know, looking at it now, I'm saying, man, that's a huge concern. For next year, I think offensive coordinator, play calling, sequencing plays, coming up with answers, that to me is way more of a bigger concern. I would still expect the things that Paganetti was working on, the O-line, the run game, as long as Jeff Stoutland's in the building, I think you kind of earn the benefit of the doubt there over almost, what, a decade now, that those things are going to be strengths of the football team.
All right, Sheil, final thing, and I'm starting to look ahead to next year, obviously, not just who's calling the plays, but the games themselves. And we know who they'll play. We don't know the sequence. But we know the Eagles are going to play on that Thursday night to open the season. And we know it's going to be a home game. And, Sheil, I'm curious who you think they're going to play. Now, let me give you the choices. Game one of the NFL 2025 season, I'm going to throw out the Broncos and the Raiders. There's no way the NFL is going to have an AFC non-rival against the Eagles.
Not Chip Kelly's return to Philly.
No, exactly. All right, so, Sheil, here's who you got. The three division teams, and honestly, I'd throw out the Cowboys and Giants. I don't think they're considered good enough for a marquee game like that. So I really think what you're looking at are the Commanders, the Lions, very intriguing. Although Fox might want to grab that game, and it could be a Fox-NBC battle for who gets Eagles-Lions. You got Commanders-Lions. I don't think it'll be the Bears. And then the Rams.
Ben Johnson thing makes it a little more possible.
A little bit, but they're just not that good. And then the Rams rematch of the Eagles' closest playoff game. Commanders-Lions, Bears-Rams, or if you want to throw the Cowboys in because it's traditional, which one is the NFL tap for game one of the season when the Eagles unfurl that banner?
The one that stood out to me when you said it is the Lions. You know, we thought we were heading towards that game all season long. You know, we were talking on this show every week. We were saying, hey, Eagles-Lions in the NFC Championship game. It never happened. You're talking about a high-powered offense against Vic Fangio's defense, Dan Campbell, Sirianni, emotional guys on the sideline. I think that one would certainly have a lot of juice. I think the Rams one was probably number two to me. Now, the Rams might trade Matthew Stafford this offseason, and so we don't know. You know, who are they going to have at quarterback? If we find that out maybe before this schedule is set, I could see that one having some juice. But if the league feels like, hey, there's some uncertainty there and we might get a dud at quarterback, let's not even go near that one. Maybe that one's off the board. So, I think that the Lions are probably number one there. And Jaden Daniels and the Commanders are probably number three. I mean, you can't really go wrong with putting him in the national spotlight.
I will say this, Shiel, and I don't know quite how it works, but I know this. Fox would be ticked. Because it's literally the two best teams in the NFC. And if you put Eagles Lions together right away, Fox loses that game. That's, you know.
I don't think they'd put that game on week one.
I don't either.
They get to, I think Fox and CBS get to protect a few at the start of the season, don't they? Don't they get to protect a few the way it works? Like they're allowed a choice of a few games where they're like, you cannot take this game from
us.
That's
what I thought.
I think it's Eagles Commanders.
Shiel, NFC South. What about NFC South teams? I mean, the Bucks, the Falcons. You know, you got some youth, some up and coming feel to
wait,
some
what
of
about
those
them?
Teams. I don't know.
We're not playing them.
We're
not playing them.
I get it, but maybe they could be competitive against the Eagles in the grand scheme of things when it's all said and done.
Here's the thing: the NFL knows is that they could put on Jaguars, Titans.
Yeah.
And guess what? Millions are going to watch.
Yep.
You're right. They get to protect some stuff. I know that happens throughout the season. I don't know how much – I don't know for week one, you know, what the conversations are like. I would think that Roger, you know, kind of gets to put his foot down and say this is going to be the opener for the entire season, and we'll get you back in week eight when you want, you know, some
you
other matchup.
Think.
Hey, Shiel, good work, buddy. Let me say this. As we kind of close down the season that was, and I know we're going to be talking to you a ton, combine, free agency, the whole deal. But
you
I'll
just
say,
refuse to say goodbye to anybody.
I do. But I will say, Shiel, for the season that was, not only a big thank you to the Philadelphia Eagles for what they did for the entire Delaware Valley, but, Shiel, thanks for your tremendous work on our program, man. You're as top-notch as it gets. Of course, I say that to every guest, so they can't all be as top-notch as they get, because you guys can't all be tied.
Shiel knows everything.
But, Shiel, thanks, bud. You really are tremendous, and we encourage everyone to follow your work on The Ringer.
Well, listen, I'll point out that we've done this for 8 years, and in that 8-year span, the Eagles have won 2 Super Bowls and gotten to 3. So I don't want to say I'm WIP's Jeff Stoutland or anything, but I'm also not saying that I'm not WIP's Jeff Stoutland. So there you go.
Shiel, good work,
as always, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, pal.
You,
all right, good stuff. Shiel Kapati, that's great right there.